Wisconsin. I is at the Milwaukee Public Library to talk to Milwaukee Alderman Michael Murphy about a study that he did. That study concluded there were 888 heroin or opiate deaths in Milwaukee County between 2012 and 2015. Alderman, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Why did you do this study?
You know, I've heard from too many constituents, too many moms and fathers of lost children, and I felt very strongly that there need to be a more of a concerted effort to review what is going on out there. I'm a big believer in making sure policy is driven by data. So I had the opportunity as president of council, and I reached out to the medical examiner and asked him if he could give me his data to let me know, you know, where these individuals have died, how they've died, what's their toxicology reports. No one had ever asked them that, surprisingly, not the State Division of Public Health, not our own health department. And I think after we looked at the data and ran the numbers, it's helping to change policy and create new partnerships going forward. But, you know, people don't realize that more people are dying through opiate and heroin deaths than automobile accidents, not only on a national level, but certainly on a local level, more than homicides. And it touches so many lives in so many different ways. And I felt it was important to study this issue.
Let me ask you the three questions that your report raised. Number one, we need to narrowly define the problem. Go ahead, define it.
A rapid increase in legalized narcotic being made available to people and sold as a non-addictive drug, which it was, and then pulling back from the prescription of illegal narcotic, and people are being addicts. And they then go to the next illegal product, in this case heroin, to keep their addiction going. As a result, we see, you know, hundreds if not millions of people have now been addicted due to illegal narcotics.
And point two, who is most at risk?
Interesting and very important question. I think a lot of perception is, and certainly it should be, looking at young people. But the reality is the average person dying in Milwaukee County is a 43-year-old white male or white female. 60% of the people are Caucasians. But it's a much older skewed than people realize. And I think that debate and that conversation hasn't been held as much as it should be.
And then the final targeted communication strategy. Is it just communication? Because communication implies it doesn't deal with the treatment.
No,
modality.
There's really a three-prong attack. I mean, there's certainly the law enforcement interdiction of stopping the narcotics from getting into our communities, but we haven't had as much success as we'd like. Two, it's really treatment, finding options. President Obama really has been pushing hard to provide allocation of resources to allow for more treatment throughout the country. Unfortunately, Congress, as usual, has not taken that up and authorizing that. But we're going to do the best we can here locally, and certainly education. So we're one of four cities in the country under the DEA's campaign, 360 strategy, and we're aggressively reaching out to the media outlets and others and holding meetings and trying to communicate to the public the importance of keeping these oxycodone and other opiates out of the stream.
You mentioned this about some stereotypes. Number one had been that a lot of young people were using and dying, mm-hmm. but your report says the majority of white overdoses occur between the ages of 30 and 39.
Right.
Is that a surprise to you?
It was to me, not to the coroner, but it was a surprise because, you know, I was generally hearing from moms and dads telling me about their kids who got addicted and asking for resources or they've lost lives. It's really this very kind of dirty secret. There's a lot of older addicts in our community. And a lot of them are passing away. And I think that's a message I've tried to communicate to DEA and others, that we should be talking about that targeted audience also.
And also reading from your report, black overdose victims skew older, 38% occurring between the ages of 50 and 59. Why that disparity?
Well,
white so much younger and black so much
older? It's a
great
question that we're, you know, I've set up a partnership with the medical college where they've authorized $50,000 the city has in the Zilber Foundation to hire an epidemiologist to deep diver into these questions. I have my own feelings why I think there's been such a revulsion against heroin from the 60s from the black community, that there is just very antithesis to seeing the use of heroin. At the same time, it's documented that medical doctors were non-prescribing to African-American patients pain medication. And maybe it was subconsciously or consciously because Maybe they felt that they were going to be more susceptible to addictions. So they didn't get onto the oxycodone as much as the rest of the population. Unfortunately, we do see the numbers getting higher now for African Americans. I think the cartels recognize how much money is to be made into it. Unfortunately, they're going to bring it into our community. At the same time, Steve, I'll tell you this, since I've said this at every meeting I've ever held, is, you know, in the early 80s, when the whole issue of crack epidemic, there was one focus: lock everybody up. There wasn't any discussion about treatment.
Right.
You know, there is a racial context, so I think in this day and age, I think that is the only silver lining. People realize this is a public health epidemic and not just a law enforcement issue.
Yeah, well, I want to expand on that, because when you say it's a public health epidemic, it's not a criminal justice issue, or to what extent is it a criminal justice issue?
It's not just. So I would say this. Certainly it's a law enforcement issue in terms of like fentanyl or any of these drugs being provided into our community that are illegal and causing great harm. But on the aspect of people who are addicted, it's a much better option of spending money on trying to treat people versus locking them up as addicts. And we have a history in our country of doing that, and it hasn't really paid off as a cost benefit. So I think, you know, we should be focusing more on how we treat the individual as a health issue rather than just a law enforcement issue.
What is the responsibility of government? Point one. Point two, what level of government? Federal, state, local, nonprofit, NGOs?
Well, this is where I think everyone in this country has to recognize what we're facing is a health epidemic. And, you know, if this was Zika virus, and we were having this type of deaths, it'd be a whole different discussion. For whatever reasons, this is looked at as a moral failing from people who being the addicts. But the reality is that you look at the economic loss to our country, taking out the moral issue. Our country is really facing huge economic losses of productivity and impact on people's family lives. And that issue should be enough to really get Congress to get off what they've been doing, which is not much, and authorize President Obama's bill to get some money for treatment.
Now, you're a veteran alderman. You've been watching this for a long time. So I guess my question is, how has the debate changed and evolved? Because there was an assumption this wasn't, well, I guess it's a question. Was there an assumption this is an inner city problem? But your map on page 4 shows heroin deaths throughout the whole suburbs. So it's not just far from a inner city issue.
No, it isn't. But keep in mind, it drives a lot of our crime in our city. So drug dealing, you know, we had a little boy named Bill Thau, an Asian boy who was killed because the drug dealers went to the wrong drug dealer house, the wrong heroin dealer house. So people forget, you know, the crime that we see in our streets is based on, a lot of times, is supply and demand. The same analogy is with Mexico and the United States. We provide them the guns, and we buy their drugs. Here, you know, we have a lot of suburban and even further out reaches of Milwaukee coming into our city to buy the drugs, which is then driving drug rival gangs fighting each other. So it's very complicated and complex, but there's a symbiotic relationship here between the addict and the dealer, but it's causing a lot of harm on our streets in terms of violent crime. So your question is, state, federal, local, all levels of government have to take this on and recognize this as an epidemic. In addition, the community members need to work together with all of us to try and find some solutions, and that's what we're trying to do right here in Milwaukee.
Now, you've been talking about Congress has not passed President Obama's bill. Mm-hmm. Is there support for some type of money to address this problem in the Capitol, and how are you doing on a local level with resources?
Right. Well, in the state capitol, you know, you have Representative Nigron. Unfortunately, his own daughter is an addict, and he's passed some very progressive legislation on issues as it relates to how we deal with law enforcement on this aspect. So I am pleasantly surprised at that. However, there hasn't been a lot of state money coming in to help on issues, at least locally. Federal dollars, we would, you know, have the ability, if the bill is passed by the state, by the federal government, of nearly $13 million coming to Milwaukee, potentially. But the issue locally here, you know, I put money into the budget as budget amendments. I've really pressed, and the mayor's been supportive of looking at any additional resources. But, you know, we're limited in our ability in local government to what we can do. But from our limited resources, I hope to expand our ability. And that's why I've developed partnerships. I think it's really important when you have limited financial resources and also technical expertise. I've reached out to the medical college, and they've been willing to support us on this, as is the private foundations like the Zilber Foundation.
In the wake of your report, what has been your interaction with the police department? Have they been able to develop some of these partnerships that tell you about the cause of this and how to fight it? What have you learned from the police department?
Yeah, so we have a pretty active HIDA unit, which is a unit that's a partnership with the federal government, our DEA agents. And, you know, what they see, unfortunately, is not only the roving pharmacies are occurring in our cities, but the issue of oxycodone being stolen from pharmacies, the issues involving new drugs being manufactured. So fentanyl is a drug that we found in the 3 years preceding to be only associated in the toxicology reports with 30 people of the 886. Only in the last 6 months we've seen that now over 60 plus.
Right.
So it's a 500% increase.
Right.
So unfortunately the manufacturing of these drugs are occurring very quickly, and fentanyl is an extremely dangerous drug. So the law enforcement tell me, you know, from my report, they looked at it in terms of, patterns and, you know, where we see certain areas where there's a higher incident of deaths that are occurring. We do, and we have found some patterns there that we've shared with law enforcement so they can use it in their law enforcement opportunities. But, you know, 70% of the people who are dying in their own homes.
Which I found just amazing.
Yeah, it's not.
Because you hear so many examples of people doing buys and then going to a fast food restaurant or a gas station and overdosing and dying there. 70%?
70%. And we have seen some interesting things and a more increase in the use of found in toxicology reports of people taking anti-anxiety medication, which I've shared that with the epidemiologist. We're looking at that in more questions. So why is that occurring? We also saw last year with somewhat of a plateau with the heroin. So we think Narcan is having an impact in terms of saving more lives. But, you know, you look at the national reports, that's just a temporary fix, because eventually somebody who's been saved with Narcan once or twice, they end up missing it and not making it, you know, third and fourth try.
Right.
But at least we've seen some of that. The disturbing thing is the rapid increase we see in the use of fentanyl. And, you know, they're manufacturing these drugs as quick as you can think. And I think that's the big challenge for law enforcement, how to address that issue as it comes in. Once again, trying to reach people, you know, trying to stop them from even beginning and starting. But I talked to the district attorney in Manhattan. I never knew this, that oxycodone, a legal narcotic, when it was originally made and sold, was sold as a non-addictive drug. And of course it was, you know, and they knew that. And they have been sued for that. But the issue is, how do you help a society that has been very readily using, you know, hard narcotics for pain, and it became part of the doctor's, you know, fifth pain would be
right.
A category for them to consider, and they overprescribed, and as a result, we have created a lot of addicts in our country.
And let me following up is that has the medical community, number one, acknowledged their role in overprescribing and begun to cut back? Do you think?
I've heard them. I had a forum sponsored at Marquette University, and I had doctors come up and say exactly we're at fault too, and we accept. And this was from the medical establishment saying we made big mistake here. And I have seen a reduction. Now certainly, you know, we have evidence in the past of what you would call pill doctors who were just giving out. I think the DEA and local law enforcement has done a good job of going after those individuals. But, you know, I still hear anecdotal evidence that, like, a dentist, somebody gets a Rucanol, a 16-year-old kid, and they get 30 days supply of oxycodone. Well, that's crazy. You know, it used to be when you and I did that, you would get, you know, here's some ice and take 3 aspirin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 30-day supply of oxycodone would be too much, you know. And so at least that's what I've heard from the medical establishment. So, you know, we still do need to do a better education in that arena, but I think it's certainly a lot better than it used to be. That's the reason why you see oxycodone on the streets of Milwaukee or in any large urban area in the country at $20 a pill when it used to be $1. And, you know, heroin, unfortunately, is more cheaper than oxycodone.
What's your advice to parents and grandparents who are raising kids in terms of the issue of heroin, opiates, and fentanyl?
Yeah, well, one basic little thing you can do, you know, a lot of parents and grandparents have a medicine cabinet full of these drugs. So we set up places at all the police districts where they can take it legally and have it taken care of legally and destroyed. But keep an eye on it. If you're still going to keep them in the medicine cabinet, you know, maybe she'll lock it up. Because kids get into it and they know there's a lot of money to be made from it, and they want, and kids are want to take experiments, and people are young and they think nothing can ever hurt them. So I think having you know, with your child, a serious discussion about it at a very early age. I have an 11-year-old little girl, and I've talked to her about it for the last year, and she'll be turning 11. And, you know, we talked about, you know, what is, why people take medication and why it's important, but at least begin the discussion. And I think as we get older, some people who have been addicts, you know, it's the recidivism is very high.
Yes.
And I've talked to parents who've blamed themselves because they weren't using tough love. Like, they bailed them out of jail repeatedly. They had their wedding ring stolen. They had their credit card stolen. And they still bailed them out. I'm no expert. I mean, that's a tough call as to what is the easiest and best way. I think you want to talk to the medical experts on that and reach out to people. But part of the problem is resources, right? And that's why we could use this money from the federal government to really help the treatment centers. So there is more resources so parents can turn to, or cousins or brothers, to find out what I can do. I think that would help a lot.
Schools are being asked to do more and more in terms of feeding children and overlapping with childcare. And so, what is the role of schools in this issue?
Well, schools have taken a bigger role, and you're right. They're asked to do more and more with less. But I think schools should bring in people who are qualified to at least talk to the kids and also the parents. So setting up these forums, I think, have been very useful. Not just to frighten people, but to provide thoughtful educational materials as to what options you can pursue. So I think schools have to do that, and I would say, you know, not just at the high school, at a younger level, at middle school.
One of your partnerships, one of your discussions is with the DEA. Let me ask you this. Do they say this is a winnable war, Alderman?
Well, the DEA, I think locally under Bob Bell leadership, has taken a great lead on this, and they are very actively engaged in wanting to change the outcome. But, you know, we've had a war on drugs for as long as I've been alive, and we haven't really won, right? I think the problem is human nature. People will experiment and try things. I mean, we don't even talk about alcohol, which is another drug that's a legal narcotic that has a huge cost in society. But I think, you know, with this crisis, with opiates and heroin, I do think we can change the outcome, but it's not going to be overnight. It's going to take everyone involving in this partnership. I think the new way, the new strategy I would like to look at it is looking at it from, I said, as a public health epidemic. Because, you know, our past efforts of just looking at it as a law enforcement issue has failed. And I think it was either Einstein or some other philosopher. So if you do the same thing over and again, and you get the same results, you know, it's a sign of insanity. So I think, you know, I think we changed that paradigm by looking at it as a public health epidemic.
To what extent do you think the growing use of heroin, opiates, and fentanyl is a result of the economic hangover from the Great Recession? People not recovering in terms of their wages? Do you think that still plays that is playing a large role in the dramatic increase in these deaths?
That's what, you know, the epidemiologists in the Milwaukee Health Department are going to be diving much more deeper into the numbers that we have. I do think from what I've done on research, you see, surprisingly, the age group that is white male and female that are dying sooner than they used to, and based on stats. So, and I think they attribute that to the recession of people who have just lost hope. And do I think that drugs have played a role in people's, perhaps. But I think this issue with opiate and heroin has been going on longer than the recession.
The average age of the deaths in your survey was 43.
Right.
White male, 43. Right. Is this someone who's had a job, or is this someone that has been homeless at some point in the last year?
No, I mean, from our preliminary research, these people, you know, have been gainfully employed. I mean, surprisingly, people have been able to still function by taking opiates and heroin for a while. It obviously catches up with you. I mean, there is a point where you can't cover it anymore. and it becomes readily available. But for a while, people can manage their addiction, but it's just a matter of time. And some people, it's sooner, some versus later.
What was the biggest surprise in your that you found doing this report?
I think my preconceived idea when I went into this was thinking that majority of people were young people dying, based on what I just heard from people calling me on the phone and constituents stopping me at the grocery store and talking to me about it. And then finding out it's a much higher age level, and people are also other types of medications being found with victims, anti-anxiety medication. I think that was surprising. And I would say that the fact that it strikes across everywhere. I mean, it is everywhere. So, I mean, we have people dying who are African-American, Caucasian, but it strikes in all economic levels. The one segment it hasn't really hit very hard on is the Latino community, thank God, and the Asian community. And that's what the one saving grace.
Leaders like Representative Nygren get involved because of, Representative Nygren has a daughter who's addicted. Do you have a family member or a close friend who's been touched by this addiction?
No, I've been, very lucky. I haven't. But it's certainly, I've known people, that have been addicted. And especially in my role as council member, I've dealt with a lot of families just in trying to talk about this issue in a more public manner. So I've had a lot of those conversations. Ironically, my own home was broken into by three heroin addicts. Two years ago after I started my campaign on this issue. And it was just very ironic. And they were caught. And it was two white females and a white male. And, he had probably committed 80, 90 burglaries. People forget about all the crime they commit. They continue their habits. And so, in that case, his mother and grandmother are at the court sentencing hearing, and both of them testified that he had stolen from them also. And but probably in his case, the fact that he was now finally going to be clean for a while may have saved his life.
If someone recognizes that they're addicted and they want help, are there the resources in the Milwaukee area for them to get help in a timely manner?
From what I've been told from parents, and not as readily as I would like or they would like, and that gets back to why I think the federal government needs to provide some of this financial relief. I think the demand is outreaching the supply of healthcare professionals out there. I think if you have financial resources, as usual, you'll get good care. But for those who are more at the lower income strata, it's much more difficult.
Just a couple more questions. The age range in your report is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were three cases under 9, and there was at least one 80 to 89.
Yeah.
So it really does cut across.
All demographics, all age groups, spatial relationships, from 12th and Brown to, way out in the furthest extremes of every suburb that you can imagine. Interesting enough, Steve, when I had this discussion with construction workers about legislation affecting our residents' preference program to create jobs in the city, and mm-hmm. they asked me what else I was working on. I said, "Well, I'm working on opiate and heroin." They had they stopped. We don't want to hear about the other issue. We want you to talk about that issue, because we hear so directly from our employees, either they're having to take off work to take care of a child, or they all themselves have an issue where they failed the test. And he says, "This is a major issue affecting the construction industry." And we're seeing it right now. So this is an issue that's much bigger than people realize.
Well, maybe my final question then. Is it an issue that more and more parents, more and more public officials are now recognized as, to use your term, a public health epidemic? Are you encouraged or discouraged by the response to your report?
I'm encouraged, but I would say that there's so many things coming at people on a daily basis, and a lot of it's bad news. I hope it doesn't get washed out. I do think this will be a major issue in the presidential race, though.
Okay.
As bad as it is in the Midwest right now, it's way worse in the East Coast. And I think usually, unfortunately, we trail the East Coast by a few years and things. And I think the presidential candidates are going to hear it at town hall meetings, and when they hold them, this is a major issue, and I think this will be an issue in the presidential campaign about what resources are being made available to help people.
And then maybe just a PS question. What What's going to be your next step in trying to fight this?
Well, my next step is really developing more partnerships. We as a city can't do it all. So I recognize we need to work with people like the medical college and private foundations to reach out and find additional resources, but also to make sure when we look at this data, we look at it in a smart manner. That's why I've wanted to work with the medical establishment, to hire an epidemiologist, to really look deeply into these numbers. The worst thing you can do, I think, for government is to spend money because you think it feels good and you think you're making a difference. I want to spend money that makes a difference and that I can show to people this is cost effective. We've helped make things better, not just because we think it makes it feel better. So when we get good data, it should drive good policy.
Very good. Thank you. Alderman Michael Murphy, thanks for talking about your report.
Thank you for taking the time to do this. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thanks.
Bye.